and welcome to the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates. Nessel & Associates is an ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. Hello, my name is Jonathan Donald, the founder of Invert Ventures, a change strategy firm. And today, once again, I'm co-hosting with my friend and dear colleague, Dr. Jack Nessel, the founder of Nessel & Associates. The ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast seeks to share expertise, insight, and create effective conversations to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. The primary purpose of the podcast is to discuss, share, and reflect upon effective and efficient ways in which to realize ERP organizational change success. We will discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change. Once again, this podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change. It's our sincerest attempt that it is a collaborational tool and a project success resource. We hope that you find this podcast useful as we share lessons learned, best practices, and explore the human elements of ERP organizational change. Our podcast draws on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner experience of both project successes and failures. The overall review and theme of ERP and organizational change practice, literature, and research suggests that understanding and an awareness of tactical approaches founded in principle is fundamental to ERP organizational change success. Our podcast will discuss these tactics, approaches, and the principles that they're founded on in order to be useful in addressing ERP organizational change challenges and risks so that we can expand what we see, so we can choose to act differently and enable successful ERP organizational change.
Thank you, Jonathan, and we are so happy and it's a pleasure to have you co-hosting with us today. We are a podcast that desires to engage in valuable insight into the world of ERP organizational change success with interviews and roundtable talk. Our guests include experts and pioneers in the field, organizational stakeholders, practitioners, and researchers. This podcast is intended to be a discussion on any and all things ERP and organizational change. And our podcast is a platform for those seeking to share, learn, and reflect on ERP organizational change success, as you had mentioned. In this episode, we will cover two topics: the benefit of industry-specific ERP platforms and emerging technologies in ERP. We will discuss with Paul Magel the pros and cons and the value of industry-specific ERP platforms, as well as where ERP is heading in terms of emerging technologies and technological advancements in software development.
Thank you, Jack. And before we invite Paul Magel on, I want to just give a little bit of background. Mr. Magel is the president at Application Solution Group, Blue Cherry ERP, and the Computer Generated Solutions Inc. company, and brings years of experience and practice to our podcast in terms of ERP software development and implementation practice. His experience is really relevant to our technological part of our ERP triad. Paul has more than three decades of experience in the information technology space, leading the Application Solutions Division at CGS, that Computer Generated Solutions Inc. Mr. Magel oversees the company flagship Blue Cherry Enterprise Suite of Solutions for the fashion, apparel, and consumer lifestyle product industry, as well as the technological and infrastructure practice, which oversees sales, delivery, support, and development. Paul is also responsible for the CGS Global Software Development Centers in Europe and in India, and the recent expansion of Blue Cherry Solutions in Europe and Canada. His background touches industry, technology, and international experience. We are so lucky to have Paul on the podcast. For more than 10 years, Paul has served on the International Trade and Marketing Advisory Board for the Fashion Institute of Technology at SUNY. He also serves on the selection committee for the Polo Ralph Lauren New Times Group Scholarship, awarded to students with a strong scholastic record and visible volunteer work at ITM and FIT, the industry and community. He's a noted speaker at such industry programs as the Apparel Executive Conference and the AAFA Executive Summit. He's been interviewed and quoted on a number of topics ranging from the sustainability of retail and supply chains in such public publications as The Observer, Retail Drive, E-Commerce Times, and Supply Chain Executive and CIO. We are so pleased to have Paul Magle on the podcast today with us.
Thank you, Jonathan. So the value of industry-specific platforms and the future state ERP platforms to businesses is what we'd like to discuss with Paul. So first, we will examine some key points in which to consider during ERP selection and the role and value of industry-specific platforms. Second, we would also like to examine the role of emerging technologies and future state ERP systems. ERP platforms are at an exciting point in terms of implementing and integrating emerging technologies into their products. And as anyone in the ERP organizational change business will tell you, attention needs to be placed on all aspects of the ERP organizational triad of people, process, and technology. While the people and process part of that triad will always be critical, emerging technologies and the technological advancements of software development will certainly have a significant role to play in ERP organizational change success. How? Well, let's ask our guest. Paul is someone who has seen great success in the ERP space, and as someone I greatly admire, and as someone who is a true industry thinker and leader in ERP development, Paul, thank you so much for being with us today.
Guys, thank you for having me. It was quite an introduction from both of you. I think your listeners are going to either say I'm very, very experienced or very, very old. I'm not sure which one yet, but maybe by the end they'll be able to make a distinction between the two, I guess.
Well, we really appreciate having you, Paul, and we look forward to interviewing you and getting some of your insight. So thank you again.
You're welcome. I'm looking forward to it. Again, I also want to commend you for, I'll tell you, being in the ERP space for quite a number of years, the fact that you really focus on this human element of change, I think it's something that many companies and many consulting organizations and many companies going through an ERP implementation don't take seriously enough or don't even address at all. And it's a critical component to be successful for an ERP implementation.
Agreed. Thank you very much, Paul. We appreciate that. So without further ado, let's get into the conversation.
Paul, such a pleasure to have you. And thank you for looking at the way we talk about the triad here on the podcast. But given your background, I think the conversation's really going to focus on the technology side of the ERP triad. And one of the most common challenges when doing an ERP transformation is the ERP system selection. Now, can you speak a little bit about this? And do you see this as one of the most crucial decisions to be made? And if so, how does that fit into your process?
Yeah, so, you know, to answer your first part of the question, yes, it's a key component of any ERP implementation. It's not only picking the right product, but it's also picking the right partner, right? So it's critical that before you start on a search, number one, I think one of the most important things is really identify the problem you're trying to solve. Because even though we're talking about technology in this podcast, technology for technology's sake is really not the answer. You need to be solving a business problem. You need to know what problem you're trying to solve. And that's the only way you can really evaluate the fit for the software you're looking at, the fit Yep. for the partner that you're bringing to bear on that, and also the company. So again, to use your term of a triad, it's the product, it's the people that will implement it for you, and then it's the company that stands behind it that you have to really evaluate. And to do that effectively, you have to really know the problem you're trying to solve and then put together scripts to make sure that the software that you're looking at can dig below kind of the sales speech and really see the functionality and make sure you understand the community you're joining. And I speak to community a lot. And to me, that's really the customers of that vendor, how they treat their customers, how that community interacts with each other, and how they can work for the betterment of each other is all key components to really evaluate.
Paul, I'm struck by what I'm hearing here. I just want to reiterate that the tech side of this needs to work in collaboration with solving a business problem in that community. And that's really one of the core decisions here. What a fascinating take from the tech side.
No, look, it's absolutely right. You know, technology is a means to an end. And sometimes, you know, who cares what the technology is as long as it's solving the business problem. So I talk internally a lot, you know, justifiable technology or justifiable solutions. We don't want to do technology for technology's sake. You want to make sure you're solving a business problem, doing it in the most efficient way with the least amount of risk that you're bringing on your organization.
Mm-hmm. Great insight, Paul. And so just to distill that down just a bit further, would you say, or what are some of the key factors specifically that you would recommend our listeners to look at in deciding upon an ERP solution? So if you had to list 5 or 6 or 7 specific things, some key factors, what would you say those are?
Look, I think first and foremost, you need to partner with a product and a company that is well vetted and deep understanding of your industry. There's a lot of ERP products in the marketplace right now. We talked about, you know, really getting into industry-specific ERPs, but an ERP system is your central nervous system across your whole organization. And it's important that the product is really built for, designed for, and tuned specifically for your specific industry issues and industry complications. You know, when I talk about community, that you're also bringing on a product that has a number of users that are also working on the same problems that they're trying to solve, the same business problems they're trying to solve. And you're talking to people who speak your language when you're talking about, you know, item versus SKU versus units versus, you know, that you're all in the same, you're all in the same language. So again, first and foremost, are you talking to a partner and a product that understands your industry and understands the problem you're trying to solve and the software is tuned to that? I talked about, you know, the people that you bring on board. Again, are the consultants who will implement that solution, are they part of the company? Are they employees? Are they a partner of the company? So they're disjointed from the software themselves. Are they part and parcel of the software as well? Or are they a third party firm that's built out? Are they, you know, yesterday implementing a manufacturing solution to build planes and then tomorrow they're trying to implement a manufacturing solution to build apparel and fashion,
right?
You know, or are they specific? You know, so those are two pieces. And then obviously, you know, things like the product and product fit, the customer base and those types of things. You know, those are kind of the top key components that you can look for. We can dig deeper, but I think that's the most important place to start to kind of build that short list of companies that you're talking to.
That's fantastic, Paul. I want to zoom in on something you said here and give our listeners a little bit more insight. Can you speak to the importance of having an industry-specific ERP platform versus a general one-size-fits-all solution and how you see this in the marketplace today?
Yeah, look, I think it's quite important, right? There's, we like to say sometimes, the horizontal ERPs that try to be many things for many people and they support many industries across. And again, if you just use, you know, some common sense, if you're supporting multiple industries, you're splitting and watering down your investment in R&D, you're splitting and watering down the amount of expertise you can have in any one industry, which then means that you can only solve a certain amount of problems that are specific to a specific industry. And then companies who are supporting those horizontal ERPs have to look at where is their revenue coming from. So if they have one industry that's supporting them more than another industry, then their funding goes more towards to help those customers. And then the customers who are not in that focused industry kind of lose out when they have kind of unique problems that come about. They're not getting the attention. So when you look at specific vertical ERPs, you really try to focus in and eat, live, and breathe a particular industry, you'll find very deep and very wide capabilities that really meet the needs of that specific industry. You know, we target into consumer products and then even kind of a sub-industry in some regards to the fashion industry, whether it's apparel, footwear, accessories, small appliances, you know, home furnishings. But there's a whole host of requirements for those companies and how they work with the retailers and the retail compliance rules. You know, how do you interact with those? They're, you know, very deep and need to be ingrained in the ERP, where more horizontal ERPs don't build out that retail compliance that are specific to those industries. So you have to build that yourself as part of the implementation. Just even the database design, if you're doing an apparel product, you've got an added dimension, you know, with size, style, color, that's typical SKU. in a consumer product may not have or may not handle well. So the screens and things and how you look at become much more complicated when you're working in multiple dimensions. Again, those are just a few of the examples, but you can imagine, again, just using, as I said, some common sense, talking to somebody who grew up in the industry, knows the problems of the industry, and someone who's coming from a more generic manufacturing background or distribution background when you're trying to solve a specific business problem.
Paul, this is fantastic. What I'm hearing here is that the core is understanding the business well enough to know how they use the nerve system as the ERP and what their business actually looks like. And I wanna just change gears just a little bit here, because there's so many companies that are selling ERP services, and many businesses are looking into the market and asking, okay, how do we choose the right partner and the right ERP system? And I want to distill it. If you had to give them one single piece of advice on how to approach that search, what would it be?
So it's an interesting question. And you know, you mentioned the term partner, right? So a lot of ERP vendors go to market with partners, or as I mentioned earlier, they'll subcontract consultants to implement. And I think the important thing to note is that you're only as strong as your weakest link. So the thing to drill down to is to look at what it takes to implement a full ERP system. You know, are you looking at best of breed and you're buying multiple products across multiple vendors? Are you looking at vendors who've got a more robust footprint that can go kind of from concept to consumer, that does everything from the design to the manufacturing side all the way through to tracking the goods to the consumer? Or do you need, you know, third-party pieces and plugins to make this horizontal ERP work in a vertical fashion? And then you start going to five-person companies who's developed an add-on that you're required to actually make that horizontal solution work in your industry. So again, at the highest level, I always say is, you know, look across that chain. Is there any weak links there? And that allow you to evaluate the software correctly, the partners that you have to bring to bear to, from a software standpoint, technology standpoint, to build out that solution. And then again, on the people and the consultants who come into you, how well vetted are they in the industry? Are they employees of the company who have vested interests of making that software work well, and you don't have people pointing out, well, it's the software, it's not the way I configured it? Or is it one ingrained company who are in lockstep with the product and the consulting side, and they've got access to product managers and developers when things happen? Everyone's working in concert and not at odds with each other.
That idea of concert, I just, before we go on another topic here, as I'm listening to you, this approach of aligning all of those things, including how the consultants are coming in, how they're compensated, what structure they are in, and what relationship to the company, these are incredibly important things that often aren't discussed, especially within the tech focus. So I just wanted to say that's really coming up strong for me here.
No, absolutely. And again, as we said in the beginning, that whole piece that you guys focus on is that human element of it. There's a whole cultural fit as well. Yeah. You know, so again, if you're working to a fashion company, you've got to make sure you fit culturally with how that company works versus if you're walking into a different type of company. So again, while we keep coming back to the technology portion as the subject, it's well beyond the technology to be successful in ERP implementation that you have to take into consideration.
So great points, Paul. And so I just want to discuss this point just a little bit more, because I think you raise a great idea, and that is this notion of what we call true differentiators. And so, you know, with so many options, so many marketing and sales approaches, and many organizations having never been through an ERP selection previously, how can organizations, the question we have and we discuss with our clients is, how can organizations and our clients focus on looking at the true differentiators with ERP vendors, right? Because, you know, I tell people all the time and our clients that during the sales pitch, you can often swap logos on the same sales slide deck and leave the rest, right? They can all at times seem to be saying the same thing. So what do you say to that? And what are some things for our listeners to consider when trying to understand the true differentiators between ERP options during the selection process? Can you add that point a little bit more?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I think I guess being an ERP vendor, maybe I should take offense to that. You can just change the logo and it's all the same. But I understand the point of the question and what you're saying about, you know, again, many times I say to my team, look, and even to prospects, if a company's been in business more than 5 years, a vendor, I'm sure they can take an order, ship an order, you know, and bill an order. But the devil is in the details. And again, I could probably spend a day answering your question, but to say it most succinctly, and why I focus so much on community, is the way you differentiate. And it's not unlike what we do today when we go on to Amazon, and the first thing you want to do before you buy a product is look at the ratings, the opinions of the users, and you look at the community that's actually using the thing that you're looking to buy. And it's the same thing with an ERP vendor. Are they willing to open up their community to you to speak to references? How do they manage that community post-sale? You know, what is the relationship to the sales team, to the implementation team, to the development team? Is there consistency and continuity of what was promised during the sales cycle throughout the implementation and throughout the development? You know, we do a lot of investment in the community. We have dedicated LinkedIn profiles and groups where our customers can speak to each other. You know, we deliver what we call a single source code solution. So everything that we do for every customer, everything that every customer asks us to do goes back into the base product and then is made available to everybody else, whether it's through our SaaS solution or through our on-prem solution. But by all being on the same product, it allows us to invest in the community and let them help each other. Rather than come to me and pay my billable rates, they can go to each other and ask a question and get an answer. So when you start looking at the total cost of ownership, it's not just the upfront cost, but how much is it going to cost you to maintain that solution? Is it well established in your industry? So when you hire people, they may have experience already with that product, or you know within a certain radius that there's X number of people with that skill set in the marketplace. So there's a lot of components to look at when you're speaking to vendors. But again, succinctly, I think the most important thing too is to speak to their community of users, how they've been treated throughout the sales cycle, how they were treated after the sale, how heavy was the lift of implementation. And again, I used to talk a lot about an ERP implementation being an heart transplant. It's something you don't want to go through, but once you're done, you know, thank God you went through it and you're much more efficient. That's what you want to test. We know it's hard getting through it because the ERP implementation is not easy, but were you much better off, more efficient? Can you run further, climb more stairs than you did before, you know, and, you know, take on more business, add an e-commerce channel much more succinctly, you know, connect to another platform, you know, ship out the back door one at a time versus what you used to do in cartons at a time as the world changes, you know, doing those types of things.
Right. Great insight.
Paul, fascinating. Thank you for that full answer. Right, there's so much there. I'm almost remiss, but I want to change the topic here. I want to pull a little more on your background with technology and specifically the emerging tools right now in the ERP space. I'm really curious about what's exciting you and Blue Cherry as emerging technologies for ERP, and what's exciting you about what that lets you enable for your customers.
Yeah, it's a great question. And again, I think what's most exciting for me and exciting for the team is really just the rate of change, the way things are coming, right? Everyone knows technology moves very rapidly. The world that we live in today, you know, in the pandemic, post-pandemic, and, you know, the acceleration of e-commerce, the acceleration of return on investment, the,
yep,
you know, containment of capital that people are looking for, right? It comes back on us as a vendor to go back to being truly a partner, truly understanding what that business problem is, and then being able to utilize technology in a much more agile fashion than we've ever done before. You know, when you're looking at an ERP implementation, and you look at the scope and the breadth, I think the challenge is, how do we have a quicker return on investment? How do we become more agile and deliver results faster, not just in that initial ERP implementation, but throughout the life and the ownership of our product? As you know, we've recently been getting a tremendous amount of demand integrations into the supply chain. You know, everybody wants to digitize the supply chain. They need much more visibility. They need to be much faster. They need to bring manufacturing closer to home. How do they do that? What can we deliver as we start to connect into platforms? On the other side, how do we move from being 2%, 20%, 30% e-commerce business and flip it on its head and make wholesale 2%, 20%, 30% and make e-commerce, you know, the brunt of our business? How do we change our distribution strategies? How can technology move us from, as I mentioned, having pallets go out the door of goods versus one at a time? And then what do I do when those returns come back? How do I do that? And when you start to look at technology and the agility of technology, there's a lot of new things that are out there. Certainly open source products and technology that's being built out and being much more automated fashion allows us to develop much quicker. We've always developed more in a metadata, data-driven technology. So we're doing less about code writing and more about writing platforms, tools.
Say more about that for us, Paul. Say more about writing platforms rather than writing code and what that enables businesses to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, a key component of how we deliver, and which allows us to really have a single source code base for our system. But if you walked from one customer to the next, you may think they're using a different software product because it's all data-driven, built on a framework or more of a tool set that allows you to configure. And I don't like to say customize. I sometimes have a swear jar on my desk and people say, customize the system. I say, no, it's either personalization or configuration. We don't customize anything. Everything is configured specifically to how the customer wants it. And you have to be very flexible in the way you do that. And the way you do that is to build more metadata, data-driven type solutions by building out tool sets and configuration capabilities within the solution itself. So that's key. Other exciting technologies that we're looking at and integrating, certainly machine learning and artificial intelligence. Again, what we've learned over the last 8 or 9 months as we've been in a pandemic, looking at history to try to predict future demand and things has really gone out the window. So you need much more real-time analytics, much better analytical capability to take these kind of real-time streams of information coming in and making really game-time decisions. Not even in the huddle, but the line of scrimmage today to make sure you're doing, and you're much more collaborating with the consumer going forward, being able to take that demand and move it forward. So, again, very excited about the pace of change. Things like the new technology platforms, development capabilities, plugins that you're able to get from some of the systems, open source and compatibility about what's been going on recently in technology solutions. Machine learning, artificial intelligence, augmented reality is a big opportunity for a company as they go forward. In fact, CGS, Computer Generated Solutions, we just formed a augmented reality company. It's doing a lot of work in the services industry to reduce truck rolls, out to fix things where you can have an unskilled person through a tablet speak to an expert and through augmented reality, turn the buttons, turn the screws, and replace the parts with an expert that doesn't have to get in a truck and roll out to do the diagnostics. They can support many, many customers. So there's a lot of excitement from a technology standpoint. And again, the investment coming back from customers who are trying to adapt to the new world is exciting to be able to help them get through that and deploy technology in a way that allows them to a quick return on their investment.
So, Paul, I'd like to elaborate a little bit on a discussion that you actually had in an article, and I believe it was fibertofashion.com.
Okay.
And so obviously, as you've mentioned, AI and blockchain are two significant emerging technologies getting a lot of attention in the ERP realm. But you mentioned, and if I may, I just want to share a quote that I from that interview, and I want to share this with our listeners. So you mentioned that, quote, while blockchain shows a lot of promise, and not just for PLM, there are some major challenges to overcome before large-scale adoption. We are following the blockchain tech and evaluating it across our suite of products to adopt it in a way that is most efficient for CGS and its BlueCherry users. We believe the blockchain can make current processes more efficient and transparent. EDI, for example, would be a great technology to track. Blockchain also holds promise of brand new applications that were not available before. While blockchain could be helpful in tracking every step in the apparel manufacturing process, it hasn't reached enough widespread acceptance to realize the benefits. For blockchain to truly work effectively, every participant in the supply chain must post data to the blockchain ledger, and we will continue to keep an eye on blockchain technology and what it can provide, implement it in point solutions with specific benefits, unquote. So this is actually this idea of blockchain. We're doing research here internally and we get a lot of questions, and we've had some folks asking us to write some articles in regards to AI and blockchain. So using your magic wand, what would be your prediction before we see blockchain fully integrated and in use, not only in BlueCherry, but ERP platforms in general?
Yeah, so, blockchain is an interesting technology and it holds a tremendous amount of promise, right? So it's distributed ledger, right, that allows you to track everything, you know, the movement and really have a true sense of ownership throughout the process. But, you know, going back to what I said earlier, when we talked about ERP partners, you're still only as strong as your weakest link, right? So if you take a look at fashion companies who are looking at sustainability and blockchain has come up in a lot in conversations about sustainability, ethical practices, and the tracking of goods from kind of the wool that the garment came from all the way through the supply chain process. But you're only as strong as your weakest link. And if you look at the supply chain of customers, there's many, many routes along that supply chain. And if not everybody is on that blockchain link, if not everybody is inputting information via APIs or have systems that are capable of speaking to that blockchain, you're not going to have that full visibility. I mean, even today, not only from a capability standpoint, but you've got, you know, vendors who get caught subcontracting to unapproved vendors going forward as well. So, you know, the blockchain is not going to solve that as well. And then the other side of it is just the cost to manage a very large blockchain in terms of just the compute power and the heat that gets generated to manage, you know, all these increments of information that you have to style to follow is still a high cost of it. So, you know, I think the initial strength of blockchain is going to be net new applications, things that we probably haven't thought about before, but finding new uses of a blockchain that people then can come out with new applications that they can grow. So very promising. I think we still need some more efficiencies built into how blockchains get built. As I said in that quote, you know, we're still watching it and seeing where the right applications are.
Insightful. Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah, Paul, I'm really struck by how you were able to take such an exciting technology and then ask a stunningly practical question, which is, you know, what do we do with the heat? Where do we get the computing power? How do we consider that cost? And that duality is so important when we're thinking about applying this across the value chain. I want to jump in and look at augmented reality and virtual reality, another emerging technology. And you mentioned this earlier about the benefits of having labor go out and actually do very skilled tasks with a tablet in their hand. Can you speak more about how you see this emerging trend adding value to businesses and how ERP and you guys at CGS support this and plan to really capitalize on this for your clients?
Yeah, it's a tremendous technology with tremendous capabilities. As I mentioned, we started a company called Teamwork AR, which is moving kind of at light speed from an augmented reality standpoint. And some of the applications, like I said, within the services industry. So again, if somebody is doing problem determination on a piece of equipment, again, I think one of the big costs of these service organizations is the truck rolls, right? Half the time they go out and they look at a problem that was called in through a retailer on a cash register, for instance. Either there's no trouble found or it's a simple part that can be replaced. But again, if you took that cashier, gave them a tablet, and then immersed them in an augmented reality field that then can connect to an expert through that tablet, that expert can guide them about which part to touch, which screw to turn, how to replace that, and can actually solve that problem without sending and what they call a truck roll. Sending out a service technician. And if you can imagine the cost savings by allowing people like that who are not highly skilled engineers that have to go out on every problem to try to solve a solution. You know, within the fashion industry, think about especially what's going on now, you know, fitting environments where you've got a live model who is doing a fitting, but now you need to bring people from around the globe to take a look at that. And if they can get immersed in, you know, much more realistic experience that you can annotate the fit, or you can, you know, annotate and then really record all of the notes and all of the comments and bring that along in the supply chain and kind of the technical specification and tech packs of the manufacturing side. There's tremendous capabilities and applicability as we look at those technologies going forward. And that's what we're doing, is we're looking, again, going back to justifiable technology, not building an augmented reality application because we can. Finding the right problems to solve and then using the appropriate technology to solve them and to make sure that we're able to bring value to those customers.
So, Paul, I can't resist. You have some great quotes out there. And there's another quote I want to share with our listeners.
Make me nervous every time you do that, Jack, because I'm going to have to take the fifth.
But you mentioned in an interview, and I believe this was for Fashion Manuscript, actually, and it was Ask the Expert, and that, quote, integrating with all of the online platforms from Amazon to Shopify have become minimum requirements to survive in the industry. One of the biggest changes I see in the space is the role of technology moving very rapidly from being a cost center item to a valuable strategic asset that is necessary for survival and success in fashion. Increased investments in technology to deliver automation, real-time analytics, to your previous point, and collaboration will be key to competing with industry disruptors while also providing a platform for business growth. So insights derived from artificial intelligence can help manage issues associated with disruptors and minimize the potential impact on brand reputation and overall profitability. I think that's a great that's a great point. That's great insight. Can you provide more insight to our listeners on how AI will be able to provide these organizational insights? And how will this work in the context of your product? Can you maybe drill down just a little bit deeper in that?
Yes, a couple of areas. Again, and when we talk about and we look at what's going on in the industry today, if you look at artificial intelligence and like I said, machine learning. So let's look at what's going on in some of the fashion companies. I talked a little bit about earlier about the much more consumer collaboration that's needed to design and deliver garments and products to the marketplace. Again, we can't just rely on what happened historically and historic trends. We have to get much more real-time information. The only way to process that is through things like machine learning capabilities or artificial intelligence, right? So all these Pinterest boards and everything that's going on in social media, these bots that can be created, you know, as you're designing or you're looking at typically what is talked about in the industry, mood boards, right? The designers would put together swatches of fabric or pictures of different areas around the world and try to get sense for what's happening in terms of trends. But if you can have an artificial intelligence bot built that can go out and scrub social media, understand what influence is talking about, understand what Facebook friends are wearing when they're posting their pictures, and then be able to culminate a mood board based on some criteria that you put in that you're looking for, based on whether it's a luxury item, whether it's a basic item, you know, or you're looking at specific colors and trending colors. You know, that's one application that we're looking at in our product lifecycle management solution in terms of how you collaborate with social media, with the consumers as well. And then on the other end of it too, it's just the analytical capabilities for technologies like that as you're doing kind of demand planning. So not just looking at what you've done in the past, but I think we've all agreed that necessarily doesn't predict the future anymore, but current trends, current sales and sell-through data, what's selling where in what part of the country, and then making sure you've got enough time to replenish and you're much better at managing your inventory. Because again, customers are looking to reduce their overall inventory so they can reduce how much cash they're actually committing to inventory going forward as cash has become very, very important to a number of these companies. How much manufacturing do they need to bring closer on shore because they don't have the lead times? And I think things like machine learning, artificial intelligence, sourcing platforms are all going to play into how these companies solve those specific business problems as they go forward.
Paul, absolutely fascinating. I don't mean to put you in a position to take the fifth. I'm also going to quote you as a way of really narrowing down this question about how do ERP producers and ERP vendors add value today in the fashion world. You mentioned in the same article, and I'm quoting, consumers want a seamless experience when interacting with brands, from storefront to website, and they're expecting goods to be delivered fast. A focus on optimizing omnichannel fulfillment means more success for brands and happier, loyal customers. If this is the bottom line want, with everything you're seeing in response to the pandemic, the rapid need of analytics for real time, what does it take as an ERP supplier and vendor to really add value and move the needle in today's fashion companies?
Yeah. So again, you know, you're referencing, you know, what many people call that omni-channel experience, right? And experience is the key term. And as you kind of read in the quote, it's about whether you're sitting in front of a computer, whether you're sitting in front of a cashier, or you're just getting the brand experience from commercials in front of a TV, it's all the same experience, right? So whether you, you know, order online, pick up in store, order online, return in store, and have the same exact experience, and the technology has to follow you, right? So you can shop online, build what you want to buy in a cart, but when you go into the store, that technology system has to be able to understand when you give them your loyalty card that you have a cart that hasn't been processed yet. So that cashier or that shopper knows what you looked at, what you like, and can pick it up from there, or can have it put away in a cubby hole in the corner of the store, or you know, have somebody there to put it into your trunk. So as an ERP vendor and as a solution provider and supply chain provider to the industry, it's all about the connectivity and the communications. So when we talk about, you know, all of the acceleration of the demand for us has been around the integrations. The days of a point of sale system not talking to a back-end distribution system or not having hooks into their supply chain partners or their retail partners are over. You know, again, when they read the quote about technology, you know, not being a cost center, but a strategic business asset, sounds a little bit dated because I don't think it's a debate anywhere in the industry. I think everyone is looking at technology as a strategic asset and trying to figure out how to do more with less from a technology standpoint. So that omni-channel experience, that brand experience you talked and asked about, puts a tremendous amount of demands on the systems to be able to communicate and talk. So some of the things we've done most recently is built out a universal API across all of our system and across all of our processes. So while I hate to say, you know, historically we've probably been seen more as a closed system where we were very protective of our processes because we wanted to make sure the data within our four walls was correct. And it followed our validation processes. And we didn't want people pushing things in and out unless we were the ones who told you how to push it in and out. The world is different now. So we've created an open API that speaks to our processes, allows you to go through all the validation, but allows you through a web API to not only push data into us, but also to pull data out. And that's key in this new world, to have that experience, is to make sure as you move from system to system and sometimes vendor to vendor, but they're all communicating correctly via APIs and doing the data interchange. And also, more importantly, following the data validation, because the last thing you want to have is a different language in one system versus the other. So when you go across that, they lose context and you don't have that seamless experience because things are handled differently.
Absolutely. I know we're gonna switch here and look at the analytics. But before we do, I want to ask you, you mentioned that quote and that insight was a little bit dated around strategic partners. If you had to think about it right now, what would be the mindset shift in the industry today? How would you update that quote?
So again, the quote was more about technology not being seen as a core center, but as a strategic asset. And I think today the quote is, how can you double down on your technology investments to really accelerate your business model and the change required to meet the demands of the current world and do it in a safe and secure way? Because I think the other thing that's a little bit wind in the face from a technology standpoint, as we talk about digitizing supply chain, as we talk about open APIs, as we talk about cloud computing, is the bad actors in the world from a cybersecurity standpoint. So the more we're investing in technology and the more we're becoming open in terms of communications and how we communicate with our vendors and our partners and our retailers, there are people out there looking to exploit that. So not only do we have to invest in technologies to answer business problems, we now have to make sure that we're investing in technologies to protect ourselves from the bad actors there who are trying to get into our systems, get into our networks, or sniff our communications to learn passwords and steal our assets. So it's not just a strategic asset, but it's also an important way for us to protect the current assets that we have.
Fantastic. What an insight.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. And so in the same article I referred to previously, this fibertofashion.com article, and I believe you did that along with Robert DeLoren. I think I'm pronouncing his name correctly.
Hey, DeLoren.
DeLoren. But Mr. DeLoren, he described how incorporating technologies such as 3D design, consumer insight testing, and trend analytics enables merchants and your clients to have to give your customers what they want, right? So, and I know you kind of spoke to this a little bit, I think. Is Blue Cherry considering these points specifically? And can you describe for our listeners what that would be, specifically in terms of 3D design and consumer insight testing?
Yeah, so, you know, appreciate the question because we just about 3 weeks ago announced our latest product lifecycle management solution, which in the industry really works with the designers to help build the products that you're going to build, whether again it's apparel, footwear, accessories, furniture, or whatever. And again, in conjunction with that announcement, and that's what we call our Blue Cherry Next platform, we actually announced it with specific integrations to 3D partners from day one, because we believe it's critical in today's day and age, especially with the limits of travel right now, is to be able to use 3D design capabilities, not only in terms of just what the garments are going to look like, but even from a fabric, you know, how it lays on the models, how it moves with the models. There's some very sophisticated 3D technology, not only that can use in the design process, but once we have the final samples built out, those 3D images is what we then push to all these consumer platforms you referenced earlier, the Amazons.com, the Walmart.com, the Nordstrom.com, so that then the consumer experience, instead of looking at a flat 2D image of a garment, can actually look at the 3D rendering and have a much better sense for the look, the feel, even the almost the touch of the garment prior to them buying it. So those are technologies that we've invested in, partnered with customers. And as I said, our latest Blue Cherry Next version that we just released has native integration to those technologies before we even announced it, because it's critical in today's world.
Yeah, great point. And to circle back on our true differentiator conversation we had previously, I think these are the things that are helpful for organizations that's going through a selection process to really understand. I mean, the first ERP vendor to market with some of these technologies, these are significant differentiators in terms of competitive advantage, right?
Absolutely, right? So it goes back to your point about specific industry vertical ERP solutions, right? You know, if you're waking up every day trying to solve a problem of that specific industry, while 3D is applicable across multiple industries, the different use cases, and I even talked about augmented reality, you know, the services industry versus the fashion industry. So, you know, if a big portion of your customer base is a services industry, your augmented reality research and development investments are going to go that way versus a fit session or another something specific to the industry. So, again, I think and I always say I'm a little bit biased, I guess, because we are a vertical focused ERP solution. But I think the only way that you have a company or a partner that's ingrained in your business and also tied at the hip in terms of if you do well, they do well, is to find these vertical solutions that have been built out to solve the specific problems of your industry. And it's not just on the product side. It's the consultants and the people who can understand your business process and then being best practices to you because they're speaking to their entire community of like customers. So they can give you options. Client A did it this way, client B did it this way, and client C did it this way. And you, Mr. Customer, tell us what works best for you in terms of a best practice standpoint. And then the R&D dollars are spent in a way that are solving specific problems to a specific industry. So the acceleration of change and improvement is much, much faster than a horizontal vendor who has to split that investment over 5 industries or 10 industries or 7 industries. And again, back to your initial premise, that's why I believe and why we follow that path is it's important to stay focused on kind of that center circle in the bullseye, continue to drive deeper in your footprint that you service the customers, continue to add value by bringing more products, more solutions. And I think the world is moving much more to fully integrated solutions now than a purely best of breed model, where you're bringing and trying to cobble together solutions from different vendors.
Yeah, and Paul, you raise a great point in terms of these true differentiators. One of the things that we look at for our clients is what are the R&D dollars and where is that money being spent, right? I mean, yeah. I think there's a few, if you compare vendors, sometimes just that point alone is significant. And it really kind of helps you understand what the organization is all about, what they're doing for their clients, and does it really matter? So that's a great point, and that's a great question that every organization should be answering or getting answers for, rather, during their ERP selection process.
No, absolutely, because that, again, that's what I talk about is after the implementation, that long-term, right? An ERP system should last in a company 10 years, 20 years, or right? You shouldn't have to be swapping out ERPs every couple of years. So you've got to make sure that long-term vision is aligned and that you're both staying up at night trying to solve the same problems.
Right. Yeah.
Paul,
The more I listen to you in this conversation, the more refreshed I am in how aligned you are in your community focus and using advanced tools, but always at the core solving a business problem. And within your industry's experience, right, and that narrow vertical or more narrow vertical, you're able to solve those problems better. One of the things that's coming up for me here is when you're speaking to clients within the entire space of fashion, at the end of the day, when they're asking about these technologies, whether it's AI or automation or blockchain or VR, how do you frame that conversation to ask what's the real benefit they're going after? How do you have that conversation with your clients and your prospects?
Yeah, you know, again, I don't want to make it a simple answer, but, you know, because we are so community focused and it's not our annual event, it's not the investment in customer success that we have people going out. You know, I used to call it my Ed Koch strategy. We have a group that just asked how we're doing. If you remember Ed Koch, the mayor of New York, his big thing was, how am I doing? Tell me how I'm doing.
Yep.
And that's what we invest in. You know, how are we doing? How are we doing as a vendor? How are we doing in terms of delivering our product to you? And part of that question is, how are you doing? And what is it that's keeping you up at night? And more importantly, not just you, but let's bring a group of you together. And we do a lot of community events, as I mentioned, on LinkedIn. We do webinars. One of the things we doubled down and tripled down on during the pandemic was tips and tricks, because we knew people were struggling. People couldn't invest a lot, but our products do a tremendous amount of things. And sometimes our customers have more power in their hands than they're aware of.
Yeah.
It's very common in an ERP implementation that, you know, you implement 60%, 70%, 80% of the features in that platform. And you also don't keep up with all the upgrades coming. So we spent a lot of time to make sure that our customers knew of every nook and cranny within the software solutions, got into a webinar format, and we dug deep and we took input from the client. So that focus on community is built into the culture and ingrained in everybody within the business to ask the questions, to put customers together. You know, I had a client ask me a question the other day. I said, you know what, why don't you speak to this CIO? You know, we put them together in a conversation because somebody in the community already solved that problem, either with our product or outside of our product. And that's what's key. So it's asking the questions. It's investing in communication with your customers, and it's providing vehicles so you can have two-way communication and not be afraid to ask because you're afraid of the answer. You know, sometimes the best products we built or the best programs that I've been able to put in place is because the customer wasn't happy with the way we were doing something. So it's important for them to tell us not only the what's working, but also what's not working. So I can either double down on what's working or stop doing with what's the stick in their eye and they're not happy with.
So, Paul, I want to ask you a question, maybe a little bit off the beaten path type of question, but I think it's a relevant question and it's a real world question that's being asked and discussed. And that is, if our listeners, and speaking from the perspective of organizational stakeholders, were to spend any time studying AI and reading articles about AI, some hold the opinion that at some point AI will be able to replace the workforce. And so in the context of ERP organizational change specifically, what would you say to our listeners about that? What parts of the human labor will be replaced, augmented, or subsidized with AI? And I know it's a bit of a, you know, pretty high level question, but what would you say about that idea?
You know, I guess the way I would answer it was, you know, people should not be afraid of technology. People should embrace technology. And if you look throughout history, there's been plenty of technology that have come and transitioned jobs away from one person to another, right? We don't have cowboys. Well, we do have cowboys more, but again, it's not the, maybe it's a bad example, but it, you know, it's not the maid, you know, we're not delivering mail via horses and things anymore.
Right.
But embrace technology, embrace education so that you can take advantage and you understand how to apply technology, not only to your job, so you can make your job easier, make you more valuable to your companies. But technology, again, is solving a business problem. People don't deploy technology to replace human beings. They deploy technology when they can't find the human beings or they can't find the appropriate skill sets. So, you know, I don't want to try and predict what jobs will go away, what jobs will stay. I think there's a lot of factors that go into that. And also including consumer preference too. You've seen a lot of automation go and then get turned off because the consumer just doesn't appreciate talking to machines sometimes. we're dealing with a phone system. But people should embrace it and not be afraid of it. Again, whether it's you're in your career and you're concerned about it, or you're a company and you're concerned about it, if you stay close to what brings value to you as a business or you as an individual, then technology should be something embraced that you know you learn about, and you manage your career to what's coming down the pike based on that experience, and based on that research.
Good insight. Yeah, great points. So, Paul, a couple more questions here. We appreciate your time, but I'd like to end this interview on two topics that we often hear from our clients and from our followers. The first one is, can you speak more about the advantages of this idea that you talked about previously about single source code solution? How is this different, and what does it enable your clients to do, and really what's the benefit? And what's the advantage when it comes to integrating emerging technology? Can you speak to that?
Yeah. So again, single source code solutions, and again, we've been doing it for quite a long time, and it's probably not as unique as it used to be, right? So traditionally, people would bring an ERP system in-house. They would take a look at it. Again, maybe it was more of a horizontal ERP or even on some of the vertical ERPs. And then they would spend the rest of their time really customizing, creating extensions to that ERP, building programs to be more specific for their particular need. And then what happened over time is they created such an offshoot of what that original product was, they couldn't take upgrades, and they just lost the value and they lost the relationship with their vendor. Again, when we started this a long time ago, we learned that that was not the way we wanted to work. So as I said, everything that we do for ourselves from an R&D standpoint, for our customers, all go back into that single source code. So as people want to upgrade, everything that's ever been done is in that upgrade. So, you know, we have what we call an upgrade path agreement with our customers. We guarantee the upgradability from version to version, release to release, so they can stay current and get all of the benefits. As I said, it's not as unique anymore because it's similar way SaaS systems are built. You know, everything they do is put into the system and everyone gets access to it going forward. And it's an important component because things are built to a certain standard. And because things are built to be applicable to, and again, this is where the industry piece comes in, because you can be specific to an industry, it allows you, to your point earlier in the question, to really onboard new functionality, onboard integrations in a much quicker way, because you're doing it at the latest version, and then everybody has the access to move to that version. You're not having to deliver to multiple versions of a product or retrofit it to a system that's been modified from your core-based system. So going back to that agility of being able to move things much quicker and being able to bring technology to your customers much quicker, that philosophy of building metadata, like we talked about earlier, tool sets, and then having a single source of source code that everybody is on really allows us to meet this new demand of agile delivery of technology solutions for rapid return on investment.
Sure. So, Paul, you mentioned software as a service. You know, in discussing the evolution of technology, as you'd mentioned earlier, it's moving at the speed of light. But if you look at it in terms of the evolution of technology, technology costs, support and maintenance, what are your thoughts on the role between on-prem and cloud? And is there room for a hybrid solution, or is everything moving to the cloud?
It's a very interesting question. You know, my personal opinion, I think the hybrid model has to exist. I don't think it's 100% one way or the other, even from a SaaS, especially when you talk about ERP. You know, the benefit of a SaaS is you're on this kind of single solution, upgrades going to come when they come, and you're going to absorb them. I think anyone who knows from an ERP standpoint, it's a lot more of a methodical approach to updates and upgrades, and based on your configuration and based on your personalization, many companies want to control how those upgrades are handled, when those upgrades are done, there's business cycles and all those types of things, rather than it just coming and having upgrades forced on you. So, you know, we have not followed many ERP companies who went to a SaaS-based only delivery model. We're making, and we continue to produce our systems where you can deploy it in a SaaS model, or you can continue to deploy it on-prem. Or as you indicated, I think the world will be going to a much more hybrid model. If you go back to, you know, when I talked about solving business problems and not just doing technology for technology's sake. There are applicable reasons to keep some of your data in-house and in proprietary on-prem systems. There are other reasons to put things into a cloud or speak from cloud to cloud or from cloud to on-prem systems. And companies need to be and have the capability to do all of the above. And I just don't think it's going to go from one way to the other. I think you'll see a combination going forward. And many companies, you see, even competitive cloud vendors, you know, are making sure that they can communicate cross-cloud and you can do it efficiently, effectively, and more importantly, securely.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for your time today. We truly appreciate your expertise and your work. And it's been an honor to have you join us today and share this great insight.
Look, it's been an honor to be here. Hopefully the listeners enjoyed it and look forward to it. I enjoyed the conversation.
Paul, it's such a pleasure. And I'm sure our listeners got a lot of value out of this. And we just want to say from everyone here at the podcast, we wish you at CGS and Blue Cherry the best of luck and continued success. Thank you for sharing your experience and helping us create some best practice in the ERP transformation space.
It's my pleasure. And again, if anybody, more than happy to connect to folks on LinkedIn, or if anyone wants to have any further discussion, I'd be happy to communicate with your audience.
And for our listeners, if you'd like to learn more about CGS or Blue Cherry, please visit www.cgsinc.com/en/Blue Cherry. Did I get that right, Paul?
That's exactly right. Or just cgsinc.com and you'll be able to peck your way through it.
Great. Well, thanks again, Paul. We appreciate it. Thank you and be well.
Take care, Paul.
Enjoyed it. Thanks, guys. Take care.
We are incredibly excited and grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us for our podcast. We have an incredible lineup of ERP and organizational change guests, including speakers, authors, professors, researchers, pioneers in the field, practitioners, PE partners, business executives, ERP vendors, and organizational stakeholders. So please join us for our next episode, as Dr. Justin Goldston joins us to discuss ERP organizational change success factors. Dr. Goldston is a certified professional who has developed and executed comprehensive supply chain strategic plans, resulting in optimal customer satisfaction and profitability for clients around the world. He's experienced in consulting, planning, and leadership roles, while being knowledgeable about all aspects associated with supply chain management, agile project management, ERP implementation in small and medium-sized businesses, and business functions that are associated with relevant emerging technologies. Please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, and if you're so inclined, leave us some feedback. We want to make sure this is the most insightful podcast you listen to.
Thank you, listeners, for being with us as we seek to, one, promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community, two, contribute to the field of ERP organizational change, and three, bring research and practice closer together. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest in ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. Our podcast will draw on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience.
Thank you. See you next week. And from everyone here at the ERP Organizational Change Journal, we hope to see you again soon. Bye for now.